Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT Live special number 243, recorded Thursday, March 26th, 2015. F8, day two.
Hi, guys. How you doing? You ready to have some fun? We got some good stuff to talk about today, because today we're going to talk about the future. The future we want to create where the world is more open and connected, and what we need to do over the next decade to make that happen.
Welcome to our TWiT special coverage of the F8 keynote day two. On stage right now is a Facebook CTO, Mike Schreppner, who's going to be talking about and probably introducing virtual reality stuff. We're also expecting Chief Scientist of Oculus, Michael Abrash. And my name is Michael as well. So three Michaels here. And so let's listen in to Mike Schreppner introducing day two of the conference.
That can help us navigate the world. That can help all of you deal with the problem you have every day, information overload. And the third thing we need to do is build immersive new technologies that truly give you a sense of presence, that can teleport you to a new place to create these shared moments, experiences, and memories with the people you care about. If I wanted to send a message to New York 200 years ago, it would take me 10 days on the Pony Express. The railways took that down to 3. The telegraph introduced speed of light communication, instantaneous, coast to coast. The telephone was the first time we had a new natural interface. I picked up the receiver, I spoke into it, instead of transcribing my text to Morse code. And on the other end, the receiver, you can listen to what I'm saying. And you hear not just the words, but the content.
Another history lesson about communication.
Am I happy? Am I sad? All of this millennia of evolution in your brain and your inner ear allowing you to interpret the meaning of the words by the tone by speaking into the receiver. Natural interfaces. When we added a camera to that phone, we introduced circa 2015 state-of-the-art intercontinental communication technology, video chat. It gave us just a glimmer of this third area, this sense of presence. Because not only can I hear you, I can see you, and I can see where you are.
Mike Schreppner is known as Schrepp inside Facebook.
Is it raining? Doesn't make me feel like I'm actually there with you, but I get just that little taste of maybe I am there with you and a sense of where you are. So what we need to do over the next 10 years is really take all of these three areas, connectivity, natural interfaces, and true presence to the next level. Let's talk about what this means, starting with connectivity. Over the last 7 years, we've had to invest tremendous amounts into the core infrastructure of scaling the Facebook family of services to billions of people all across the planet. And that starts with just the foundational layer, the actual physical infrastructure. You can see here are 4 open compute data centers. These are Facebook designed, engineered, built, and owned. They are some of the most state-of-the-art data centers in the world, use technologies like free air cooling to dramatically reduce power and water use in the data center. To give you a sense of scale of these buildings, because it's a little hard to tell from these pictures, if you were to park the latest generation aircraft carrier next to one of these buildings, there's often 4 on a site, the building would be just a little bit longer. This is 1,300 feet approximately, end to end. Rows and rows of machinery down these data centers. They give us massive economies of scale. These economies of scale allow us to reliably provide Facebook to billions of people all over the world. And if you were to go inside these data centers and look at the equipment there, what you're going to see is stuff that we've built and designed. This is not just cooling and UPS and electrical systems. This is racks. These are 8 different classes of servers, storage units, and in our latest data center, a next-generation flat interconnect fabric, a network design completely built by us. And when you put all of these pieces together, we've saved at least $2 billion over the last 2 years just on this foundational layer, just on the hardware. And you think about that amount of savings, it is really, when we talk about
mostly on cooling,
that sort of economies of scale is required in order to affordably build the sort of services we're talking about. And the best part about this, it's not just for us. You can use this too. 4 years ago, we introduced Open Compute, a revolutionary new idea where we took the ideas of open source software and applied them to hardware and said, here's the designs for our data centers and our servers and all the equipment in them. Let's put them together and you can use them too. And this isn't theoretical. Other people have deployed entire data centers, deployed servers. If you look at the Open Compute Project 4 years later, it is the who's who of hardware manufacturers. Some of the latest entrants who have joined the Open Compute Initiative are HP, Juniper, and Apple Computer. And Riot Games, when they deployed Open Compute infrastructure, said that they've saved about 50% in their infrastructure costs. So this is foundational technology, not just for Facebook, but for all of you, so that together we can build the services that truly scale across the planet. And this is just the hardware layer. When you move up one layer in the stack and you say, I need something to run all my application code, build applications that run in my data center, you need some sort of runtime. For us, it's HHVM, a state-of-the-art JIT-based VM for PHP. This has, between when we first deployed it and replaced Zen PHP to now, at least a 10x efficiency win for us. Dramatic increase in efficiency. And again, this is not just for us. Lots of other companies, Box, Wikipedia, have deployed HPHP. Wikipedia has seen about a 5x increase in efficiency and 50% to 2x increase in efficiency and 50% to 2x increase in performance in many operations because we've open-sourced HHVM. It's one of our more popular open-source projects. So you've got this middle tier that allows you to build your application logic. And then on top of that, you need to actually build the front ends. You need to build the front end on the web, front end on mobile.
If you're joining us now, you're tuning in to TWIT's live special on the F8 conference. On stage is CTO Mike Schroeppel.
I have never seen so much excitement about a technique and a technology for building front-end applications. And again, this looks like the who's who of the internet industry. If you have used Facebook on the web, if you booked your room here on Airbnb, if you watched a movie on your TV via Netflix, you've used React and you didn't even know it. Again, this is open source. It is actually our most popular open source project now, so it's available for all of you to contribute and use. But there's been one big missing piece, and that's what we're here to announce today, which is React Native is now open source, available for all of you to use.
React Native is now open source, just announced.
React Native is awesome, and you've already used it if you've used many of Facebook apps because we've built it on iOS to allow us to take these same ideas for building responsive, flexible interfaces that are easy for lots of programmers to build and use it for Facebook. And open source isn't just a one-off thing for us. We have over 240 active open source projects. Almost all of them are actively deployed on Facebook infrastructure, meaning this is production code we're using, not just random stuff we create and throw out. There have been thousands of external open source contributors, and we estimate well over 10 million lines of open source code contributed by Facebook worldwide. So this is our commitment to build these services in the open with you. This is the first part, building services, software, infrastructure that scales across the planet. The second part of planetary connectivity is making sure that everyone can participate in the internet. This is a problem that all of us in this room probably take for granted. You're all here on 4G or possibly Wi-Fi, and it probably wouldn't surprise you that 4G distribution across the world isn't that broad. There's many places in the world that don't have access to 4G. You say, well, what about 3G? Yep, more people have 3G access. And even if you go back to Edge or 2G, which most of you probably haven't used for a decade, it still doesn't cover the entire planet. We'd estimate 1 to 3 billion people do not currently have access to internet data. And when you tease apart this problem and try to understand why is it that people can't get internet access, it's actually a basic lesson in economics and geography. In urban, dense urban areas, it is economically feasible to recoup the massive capital investments telcos have to do to provide internet access. You're doing terrestrial infrastructure, where you're literally digging ditches and laying fiber or stringing fiber across poles. They're putting up cell phone towers. You're doing lots of work on the ground to provide this access. And this costs billions of dollars that you need to recoup over a large subscriber base.
Yes,
as
the drones.
As you move to more rural areas of the world, you just can't recoup those costs. So what we're doing with Connectivity Labs is investing, as we have in OCP and others, in radical new approaches to this problem. And this basically means going to the sky. You have to have satellites, drones, and other things that don't require the massive
We all have periscope capability now.
In order to affordably provide internet access for this world. This is a picture of Aquila, our
Somebody
first prototype.
He was periscoping his walk to the
aerial vehicle. This is a solar-powered drone.
Wow,
built
there
by
it is.
A team who has the record for the longest ever
How big are those?
Power drone flight.
They can't look tell. Small.
Yeah, that looks tiny. It looks like a boomerang.
Can't tell, though.
Across an area at very high altitude, 60 to 90,000 feet in the air, stand on station for months at a time, and beam down backbone internet access. From this photo, it's hard to get a sense of scale, and this is an early prototype for testing out the aerodynamics. To give you a sense of the scale of this thing, this is us actually constructing...
Oh, it's a little bigger than version. I thought.
This is several wing segments.
Look at that. That's a 3D printer. Wing segments. Huh. That's a room-sized 3D printer.
Show this thing in and real they have life, to have large wings the for the solar panels.
Sure.
737 plane. All of you are probably familiar with
and,
that.
And, you know, good gliding
capability. It has the mass of a small car. So it's a massive wing structure with solar panels so that it can stay aloft for long periods of time. This is one of many initiatives that we're doing that we'll be able to talk in a lot more detail about later this year to provide internet connectivity for the whole world. So that's phase one. We need to get the whole world on the internet and provide all of you to build the technology needed to build services to scale. The second problem we need to solve is this information overload problem. And the most common question I get when I talk about AI
dog
is
on a
like,
skateboard.
Why is this so hard? What's this a picture of?
A dog on a skateboard.
Anyone? Dog? Right? A 21-month-year-old boy.
Anyone?
That question. Dog. Right? To a computer, this is a confounding question.
Yeah, that's true.
What is this? This is a series of pixels.
Kind of confusing to me, too. For why are they showing us?
We're confounded as well. The computer, like us, has no idea what the context of a dog on a skateboard might be.
Value, red, green, blue. And to a computer, each one of these images are the same. They're just a series of numbers. They can't really tell the difference between a dog or a car or a house or a person. So the real revolution
so this is their,
of AI and big data
moonshot, guy.
Is yeah. convolutional neural nets, this idea that you can teach computers to understand more hierarchical CTO. Representations of images. This is one of our
I just wish they would deliver the messages images, from the people that I follow.
Layers of the network. First it figures out cool. that there are
so this is the new CTO, of course,
yes,
because Brett Taylor, who would brought in as a person, during the acquisition of FriendFeed, has left.
And then that's the background. And you can see it's categorizing fruits, cars, wheels, other parts of the image. So you can start to build up deeper understanding of what's inside the content, not just the actual representation of it. But you can apply this not just to images, but to videos. I'd ask you if
Brett Left
to
found a company called Quip.
I'd ask you to tell me what kind of sport it is. How many different
that does live streaming? No, I'm just kidding.
A dozen, 100, 300 different sports? Kind of for fun, we said, can we build a classifier that classifies 487 different kinds of sports? So let's see this in action so I can tell you what you're looking at here. Up on the top of the screen, you'll see the actual top two categories. It classifies as a number of categories, but the number one is what category it thinks the sport is. This is just by looking at the pixels in the video. So it's looking at the video clip and trying to figure out what kind of sport is this. So you'll see this one's basketball. It's a fairly easy one. This is the easy clips. Baseball, badminton, rafting, table tennis. These are pretty easy, if you actually think about it, fairly easy to identify. As you can see, we have a very strong confidence interval. We're actually completely confident, 1.0, that this is table tennis.
Trumpfer isn't that, no. Of course,
cool
he's been here a couple of years. But
is you can get them to understand very minute.
I still think of it as the new CTO at
think
Facebook.
Think about all the different sports that involve skating and hockey. When I got into this, there's more than I realized. Let's look at some of these. So ice skating, synchronized skating, figure skating. Artistic roller skating, that's roller skating. Oh, that's short track speed skating. Hockey, sledge hockey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
underwater hockey.
How do they put that puck with the things on? That's
robot combat. I'm not sure that's really a sport, but.
Oh, that's a sport.
Look how quickly it's catching these. Did you see Gaelic football? That's not so easy.
Mountain unicycling?
In 0.27 seconds.
I'll lie if I
didn't
watch this video a lot of times prepping for this talk.
What about underwater
unicycling? Is that a sport? Deep
there were some sports that I didn't recognize, I got to tell you.
Inline roller skating and hockey and ice skating between hockey and sledge hockey and underwater hockey.
Periscope tells you all sorts of great stats after
but
you.
But the real trick we're trying
so much
to do
than
trying to understand context.
Is it, you think?
It is.
Images
yeah.
or video,
it's more
but
polished.
Really understand context and language. And before any of us get too excited about the power of AI and what we can do here, you have to realize how easy it is to trip up.
You could go back and see who viewed your Periscope after
really
the fact.
Test.
Right.
The
I turned it off because I stopped getting
Bob's
hearts.
The
hearts are fabulous.
Bob went to
the thing is, you can do a 1 minute video or a 30-second video, and it makes sense.
It's
whereas with Meerkat, nobody even shows up for like 10
John
minutes.
John picked up the football. Where's John? He's in the playground.
Well, that's because everybody's getting
for all of you, this is like a. Well,
this is impressive. This is although.
For a computer, again.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Facebook reportedly has face recognition. They're not talking about that yet, but it's as good as human brain's ability to recognize.
And I have to think Google does, too.
They probably do.
Train them on a ton of data, And then once you're done, it's like a little box, and you feed it something.
And this is the thing, is why.
But when you teach it new things about the world, and you feed it new facts, it doesn't learn. It doesn't have a memory. Let's try another one. John is in the playground. This is even easier. Daniel picks up the milk. Is John in the classroom?
That's easy.
I just told you he's in the playground, right? Simple question. Again, confounds most traditional AI systems.
Shouldn't it be on the playground?
So our team took a new approach. They built a new system.
Somebody get the school bully got a shovel and buried him in the playground.
I think it's Jimmy Hoffa is in the playground. The computer should have said that. Watson would have known that.
Sorry for the small font, because we're actually capturing. This is Antoine, who just wrote this paper. This is Dev Server on Friday. We know this is real because he accidentally deleted the training network and had to retrain it.
This is the Lord of the Rings story.
We're actually doing a screen cap from his from Torch, the system we've opened to build AI systems.
The story of the ring, really.
On his Dev Server on Friday. And what we're doing is memory neural net has a short-term memory, so you can answer
Bilbo
questions on facts.
Bilbo left the ring there. Frodo got the ring.
And so we like Lord of the Rings.
Frodo dropped
like
the ring.
Now, see if
right?
the eagle, if the AI says, but why didn't he just take the eagles?
If you can see this in the audience, it's kind of Bilbo.
Why didn't they just make a two-hour movie?
Went to the Shire, Frodo got the ring, went to Mount Doom, dropped it there, went back home. You know, kind of the
it's a shorter script I'm looking
version of the Lord of the Rings.
So I'm having an upload error on Periscope. Probably a lot of people doing that.
Did you crash Periscope personally?
No. Knew nothing about the Lord of the Rings. It was not which wasn't read a corpus of Tolkien. It just has seen this for the first time right before we answer this next command, and we start asking it similar questions you just saw. Things like, where's the ring?
Well, now
again,
it's...
you have to understand that Frodo had it. He went to Mount Doom, and he dropped it there, so it's at Mount Doom. Well, what happened before that? Well, Bilbo had it before that, and he was in the Shire, so the ring was in the Shire. And then where is Frodo now? Well, he went back to the Shire. So you can see complex chaining of facts together, understanding of time and relationships.
This is kind of, I don't know, is this really?
This is a true breakthrough in what we're doing.
A little bit better, Eliza.
Tepid applause.
Well, they did want to know, are you done?
Yeah, he stopped talking.
All right, so the next question I get, why is this so hard? Second question I get, I've shown this to a lot of people at work, and they're all like, sweet demo, Shrep.
North, climb mountain, get ring.
Like, cool, Lord of the Rings, I get it. I don't understand.
Thank you, Patrick Delahanty.
And that's where this comes in. When you think about the problem we're trying to solve,
you're at the end of a road.
All of you have seen this. We had our data scientists.
Hours of cat video, hours awake.
Content production of cat videos on the internet. They've determined after extensive study that it's exponential in terms of the growth of cat videos on the internet. And breaking news, the amount of hours in your day is constant. This is the attention problem. Y'all are supposed to laugh. That's all right.
Yeah, that was a joke, right? Yeah.
Everyone knows why engineers aren't good at jokes timing.
Oh, God. Please, Mike. Please, Mike.
Don't do shtick.
All right.
It's okay. He's likable.
So... in all seriousness,
this is Mike Schroepfer. He's the CTO at Facebook.
Goal, get everyone on the internet. Build services that scale.
Came from Mozilla.
We create this new problem.
Was
so
involved in the development of Firefox.
That's important to you.
Formerly from Sun Microsystems, he was CTO there.
Control over what you look at and what you see and what you interact with. A great life is where you can spend the time on the things you want and most importantly with the
people. And he's got one of the best jobs in the world.
By building systems that understand the context of the world, understand what it is you want, we can help you there. We can build these systems that make sure all of us spend time on the things we care about. That's the promise of applying AI to something like Facebook. All right. So we've got everyone on the internet. We've got systems that help you.
So we're expecting in a few minutes, Chief Scientist of Oculus, Michael Abrash.
This is VR. This is Developer Kit 2. The Oculus, current shipping developer kit for Oculus. They've sold a few hundred thousand of these to developers.
I have the first one, of course.
You may have some.
And did the right thing, which is give it to a teenager.
And similar to AI, the question we asked
He has managed to make it do all sorts of interesting things.
VR is really awesome. I mean,
our intern, Chris.
I've always wanted VR, haven't you?
Oh.
But
and of course,
why is it going to work now when it didn't work in the 80s or 90s?
Samsung's
or
Gear VR uses Oculus technology.
When you look at it, you realize what was required to make VR work now is that every core component that's part of VR, this is, if you look at the Developer Kit 2, you've got integrated circuits and IMUs and gyros to track location. You've got a high-resolution screen. You've got a high-resolution, high-performance camera to do six-degree of freedom tracking so you can see where the head is.
I want to watch this in VR.
You ready for this?
You've got to manufacture all of this at a cost reasonable for a consumer to buy. And so each one of these.
I wonder if next year you'll be able to be at the FA conference virtually.
You know,
why not?
That's really what this is best for, yes. Rather than canned experiences. I think live experiences. I was thinking as I periscoped in that if next year I had a VR camera, people could join me in the car.
This is
look out the window.
One of the first VR games, 1980 Battlezone. Did anyone play this?
Oh, I was. Yeah. Unstoppable at Battlezone.
Yeah, because you found the trick, which is if you go all the way in and you go back, yeah, you know.
Yeah, you can never never die.
You
are immersed.
You've got two levers. You do it like that, and you just back. They can't hit you.
Exactly.
Easy game.
This is state-of-the-art 19...
I know the guy who wrote the volcano code.
Equivalently state-of-the-art.
He works at Atari. Yeah.
And I tell you, in the 1980s...
And that was a big deal, because that costs a quarter.
That perfectly injected photons in the real world into your eyes.
I don't know if I want to be in a real 3D vector world.
No, there's not a second that would go by that you would think you were actually there.
But that it raises an interesting point.
2015 consumer
because that was with the technology available at the time.
It's a game under development.
Essentially a 6502.
The film here is actually shot in the Oculus. So all of the camera
motion. It'd be cool to actually be inside of a tank.
Now he said something interesting.
Hardware you can buy today.
The film was shot in the Oculus. How would that be done?
Let's see what this looks like.
Oh, I see. What they've done is they're trying to give you the experience that you would have. Oh, this is Battlezone. See, I don't think the lever trick's going to work.
No, darn it.
Maybe they didn't fix that. They were so busy on the VR.
Don't use this while you're actually driving a car.
And of course, a lot of flight sim folks use multiple monitors to get this kind of simulate this kind of look out the window on the side of the back.
In a Mobile World Congress, a guy was making a VR chair that would turn you upside down at that moment to simulate gravity.
No, thank you.
Listen up. This is Lieutenant Kavik.
Yeah, he's very immersive, right? Yeah. Much more immersive. Is this very cool? Looked like Wing Commander, it did.
Anyone else get out of their seat when you got out of that catapult at the end?
No.
No.
I swear, I've watched this video a lot, too. This is amazing. You're going to be able to do this year in VR.
This year?
This year. It's going to be incredible.
When he says you, does he mean you developers or you
You're going to be doing it
people.
In something shipped by Oculus. This is Crescent Bay, the latest prototype of what we're building to build VR.
No wires. Where are there? There's one wire.
This booth in the building next door. If you haven't seen it here, you might have seen it at Game Developer Conference or CES. We've shown this to thousands of people.
That was the teleportation booth we were just looking at.
People are waiting in lines. This is at CES for hours at a time in order to see the magic of presence and the magic of VR. And after thousands of demos, we know we are just on the cusp, just getting there to get that sense of presence. Where for a moment, your conscious brain is overruled by your subconscious, which says you are not where you think you are. When you're standing on the top of the building, you can't step forward when I tell you to, even though you're in a room and not on a building. So we know we're just getting to that minimum bar of presence this year with what we can build with VR technology. Okay. Again, sweet demo, Shrep. What the heck does this have to do with Facebook? VR is awesome. Why is Facebook talking about this? That's the very next question I always get whenever we're talking about this. And I'd ask you this. So by show of hands, how many in the audience... When you go out to the movies, do you usually go by yourself?
And this is a loaded question for this group.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, we're nerds. It's okay. This is a safe place. Why the heck do we go to a closed room where I can't interact with someone next to me, sit there for 2 hours?
Can you balance our mics with the presentation mics a little bit better? Because... People want to hear what they're
saying. Because
we're
creating a moment, an experience, a shared memory.
There you go.
On the way to the theater, can't wait to see the last installment of The Lord of the Rings. On the way home, can you believe that fight scene at the end? It is a moment in time where you and your friends or loved ones were together in a space, and you had that experience. Those moments where we're bringing people together is what we are trying to do.
Soon you'll be able to go to the movies by yourself with a bunch of other people.
You've all experienced this in a very small way.
Well, that's
on your birthday on Facebook.
One of the things that Samsung's... Gear VR does put you in a movie theater.
All over
it's an empty movie theater.
You look around,
school,
bunch
work,
of empty seats.
Family celebrated my birthday with me, and I got a surprise when I came to work. Mark made me blow out one candle for every year I was old. which gets harder every year. Let's see what this looks like.
This is what passes for fun at Facebook.
Yeah. And that's what passes for cake.
Barely made it.
I hope not.
Got to work on that lung capacity.
Yeah, but he did chop it down himself.
That's right. He killed
it. Was a fun moment.
Killed the tree.
So a reverent, fun little moment. It was a surprise. So lots of people I care about weren't there to celebrate it with me. But thanks to Facebook, they could. We shared the video. They all could see it and participate in it with me. But these moments in life that are
traditional
amazing, want to bring
birthday plank,
in with you, happen all the time, not just on birthdays. Any parent
traditional pirate birthday.
Yeah. Just this weekend, Sunday, my four-year-old rode for the first time without her training wheel.
See, that's a great thing to have.
It's an amazing event.
Yeah.
And it's one of those moments where I wanted everyone.
And I recorded it with Google Glass.
Her nieces, her nephews, her uncles and aunts. I wished everyone could have been teleported to that moment. And so the real power of marrying this technology that gives you this sense of presence.
We're going
to
need helmets with cameras all over them.
And the most.
Has he showed the camera?
Because I'm. No. Yeah. Social connection platform in the world, Facebook, together, is our ability to bring everyone into these moments at one point in time and to have this true sense like you were there. That's our hope with what we can do with VR. So that's our goal.
I'd love to see the camera.
We're going to connect the world. We're going to build systems that help you manage all of that information and connectivity. And we're going to build technology that fundamentally brings people together. I think it's going to be fun. I'm pretty excited about the next
It sounds like Skynet.
It's going to be crazy fun. And I'm very, very happy to have all of you.
Really is the race to build Skynet between Google and Facebook.
We're going to be working with all of you to bring this future about that betters all of us. With that, it is my great
I don't think they demonstrated is how it betters all of us yet.
Mike Labrash, right. Yeah. Chief Scientist, Oculus.
Definitely betters Facebook.
Well, does it? I don't even. He didn't answer the question, why is Facebook so interested in VR?
If they can make Facebook even more addicting.
Warning.
Here's the Oculus guy.
I have to tell you.
Michael Labrash.
That's what it says on his card.
Being here is one of the most astonishing events in a life that's had more than its share of them. Even 3 years ago, the idea that in 2015, I'd be giving a keynote on virtual reality to tens of thousands of people at F8 wouldn't just have been science fiction, it would have been pure fantasy. VR had been dead and buried for more than a decade.
That's true.
It seemed no closer to broad success in 2012 than it had 25 years earlier. And yet, amazingly, here we are. Recently, I took some time to think about how I'd come to this remarkable point, and I realized the thread ran a long way back. The roots clearly lay in a lifetime of reading science fiction, which showed me the path to thinking about VR as not only possible,
Snow
but
Crash.
Something that I personally
the metaverse.
Helped to make happen.
There, there it is.
And Ready Player One, which will be directed by Steven
Snow
Spielberg
Crash. Helped me see
next
that virtual
year.
Virtual worlds were possible
yep.
way back in 1994, and more recently, Ernest Cline's Ready Player One painted a compelling picture of what VR could be.
For a lot of us, Snow Crash was what kind of inspired
work.
That. And the idea of jacking
realized,
in that... William Gibson featured in Neuromancer.
Yeah. Conceptual framework for thinking about VR, it was the Matrix that made me believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Even
Not
though
in a good
based
way.
On technology that won't exist for decades, if ever, the Matrix
kind of a
gave
counter-example.
Me a deep sense of what VR could someday be like.
Someday the machines
Not
can fool us.
They've explained to you why your muscles are sore because you've never used them.
To bend and stretch that reality.
Watch for the glitches.
So I went back and watched the Matrix again. And it was just as fun and inspiring as I had remembered.
I vividly remember walking out of The Matrix, the first one.
Just before we
and
learned that
just feeling like
backwards.
My mind had been blown.
There's
yeah.
a speech
the
by
world, my vision of the world had changed.
Yeah, I saw it in Paris. Didn't hear anything about it in advance.
What it is.
So,
it was like a cool
I didn't know what I was going to see. Yeah.
And it was
Here's
mind-blowing.
Here's Morpheus.
What is real? How do you define real? If you are talking about what you can feel, what you can smell, what you can taste and see, then real is simply electrical signals interpreted by your brain. That's really all you need to know to understand why VR is not just cool, but world-changing, and why you are going to care a lot about VR sooner or later.
It's not exactly the
Let's
Lawrence Fishburne delivery I...
Morpheus' The place to start is with understanding what virtual reality really is. Most people focus on the virtual part of virtual reality, meaning artificially generated inputs to the perceptual system. However, The right place to focus is on the second word, reality. Morpheus asked the question that's at the heart of today's talk, what is real? Then answered his own question with, real is simply electrical signals interpreted by the brain. He made two critical points with that sentence. The one most people pick up on is that we, our conscious minds, never actually interact with the real world. Instead, we interact with signals from sensors in our eyes, in our ears, in our skin, on our tongue, in our nose, in our balance organs,
sensorium,
and throughout our body. We only know what those sensors detect, interpret, and signal to the brain. And that's actually a very small subset of the real world. Consider vision. We can't see infrared or ultraviolet. We only have three color sensors. We only see about a 2-degree circle in high resolution. We have a blind spot in each eye. We can only see a fraction of the full 360 degrees around us in every direction at one time. We have no blue photoreceptors in the center of our vision and a large blind spot straight ahead at night. And everything but the plane we're focusing on is blurry. Rich as it seems to be, our visual data is actually astonishingly sparse. But even if we were able to accurately record the magnitude and direction of every photon that reached our eyes, we'd still have far too little data to be able to reconstruct the world accurately.
We're basically a bunch of voles.
Yes.
For example,
wandering.
I'm pretty sure most of you have seen the dress. Is this a blue and black dress and white
and
yellow?
Here we go.
Light, or white
and this is why Facebook wants me.
Given the photons reaching your eyes, it's an unsolvable problem. No passive sensor is capable of resolving that ambiguity. In order to form a coherent model of the world, our perceptual system has to make assumptions and send its best guess to the conscious mind. And this particular picture is so ambiguous that some people see it one way and some the other. It's noteworthy how deeply certain people are about whichever guess their perceptual system makes. They just know they're right. And here we come to the second and less noted part of Morpheus's definition of reality. Real is just electrical signals interpreted by the brain. The way the brain compensates for the limited data it receives is by maintaining a model of the real world that it constantly updates as new data comes in. And it is that model, not the real world, that you actually experience and trust implicitly. Don't believe it? If you're experiencing the real world right now, why can't you see your blind spot? Why aren't you aware that you can't see blue straight ahead? Why can't you tell that you're only seeing an area about the size of your thumb in high resolution? It's because your brain has a model that fills in those gaps with its best guess at the state of the world at every moment. And it's that model that you actually see, hear, feel, smell, and taste. At the core of the reality that each and every one of us experiences lies the fact that we're inference machines, not objective observers. By which I mean that there is, presumably, a real world out there. And your brain is taking the very limited signals coming from your sensors and trying to infer what the state of that real world is based on its internal model. It's one thing to listen to words about how we infer reality, but it's another matter to actually experience it. So let's look at an example where the inference mechanism breaks down.
These are the notes for his TED talk later this year.
Yeah.
And I
something is not right here.
This really doesn't have anything to do with Oculus Rift.
Right.
I'll explain this later. But
well known.
The point is that what you see in this video.
Yeah. There's a lot of very fundamental stuff in this whole presentation.
And your perceptual system has chosen the wrong solution based on a set of assumptions. Yeah.
Well, I don't think they have that much to show. I mean. Yeah.
The same process happens every waking second of your life. The only difference is that you normally infer the correct solution to the state of the world. The fact that reality is whatever your mind infers from the nerve impulses sent by your sensors based on its model of the world is at the heart of what makes VR different and more powerful than anything that has come before. It's so important that I'm going to spend a few minutes giving you a deeper sense of how ambiguous the world really is as observed through our various sensors, and the extent to which reality is constructed by our minds rather than recorded by our senses. Where better to start than by choosing between a red pill and a blue pill.
So far, the only thing Facebook's Morpheus, done was announced yesterday, which is to embed 3D videos suitable for viewing in an Oculus Rift in your Facebook news feed.
So
that I don't think is a particularly compelling.
No.
Got it?
All right.
Let's math off everything else.
Oh, my God. They're the same.
Interesting. You were pretty sure that out there in the real world, one pill was red and one was blue. But they're exactly the same shade of gray. The colors you saw were entirely...
I can only imagine the developers in the audience getting a little antsy at this point. This
is nowhere else.
We've all seen optical illusions.
Yes, thank you. Optical illusions. They work.
What color are the pills now? It doesn't even make any difference that you know they're both gray. You still see red and blue.
I don't see red and blue.
So what does that say about how well your perceptions...
Do you see red and blue pills there?
No, actually, I don't.
To the rabbit hole. And yes...
Well, I guess I can make myself see. If you kind of squint.
By definition, it's hard to show you visual illusions that don't look Photoshopped. So your packet contains a physical version of the pills.
Oh, wow.
That you can check out later and verify that I'm not cheating.
Yeah, no, I believe
Let's look at some other illusions and what they tell us about how we perceive reality. Some of these may not work perfectly for some of you. It's a bit unpredictable doing illusions on a big screen, but they should work well enough to make the important points. Take a good look at the blue tiles on top of the left cube. Okay, now take a good look at the yellow tiles on top of the right cube. You think those are colors you're seeing now? Let's mask off everything but those particular tiles. They're all exactly
Gasps.
The same shade of gray. This is similar to the pillow.
Similar, it's identical.
But it's
okay.
Clearer here what's happening.
Just in case.
Your visual system isn't interested in whether the photons coming from a tile in a random image are red or blue or gray. Knowing that didn't keep anyone from being eaten by lions.
I'm sorry, did I say this was Ted? This is his Discovery Channel.
What he's interested in is identifying potentially relevant features in the real world under a variety of conditions. When you look at an object, what your eye gets to work with is an approximation of the spatial distribution of wavelengths of light.
Come on, man. Plug me back into Facebook. I don't want to remember nothing.
So your visual system constantly corrects for the lighting in a scene. Given the apparent lighting in this scene, the best guess is that the left tiles are blue and the right tiles are yellow. Here's another example that shows that your visual system is reverse engineering reality rather than...
I wonder why they would choose to spend so much time. They have the world's rapt attention.
See the white tiles
on
the desk?
The fact that,
yes,
the mind constructs reality.
Again, let's mask off everything else.
I think it's a... We could accept this
and again,
and stipulate it. Now move on.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you why. They have nothing to say about Oculus Rift. I mean, that's apparent, right? Yeah. They've done it.
And
that's done.
If another one is in bright light and is that shade of gray, it must be black. Your visual system does the inference for you automatically, and what you see is white and black rather than gray. Let's look at how we perceive form next. Here we have a nice square checkerboard. Let's add some dots and see what happens. This happens because some line detectors fire that normally wouldn't be triggered by a checkerboard. When we have a regular checkerboard, your visual system deploys cells with sensitivity to contrast edges at various orientations, represented by this starburst. And of those, it detects high contrast edges at exactly two orientations, the horizontal and the vertical. So you see right angles, as you'd expect. But if we switch to the bulging checkerboard image and deploy the same perceptual mechanisms to detect orientation, your visual system detects high contrast not only at the horizontal and vertical orientations, but also on slightly slanted axes as well. As a result, the perceived orientation is skewed. Rather than looking orthogonal, the corners look bowed. The checkerboard is a 2D demonstration. Next, let's straddle 2D and 3D. Take a moment and figure out which of the two tabletops in blue is wider as measured in 2D and which is longer, assuming you rotated them to line up. Ready? They're exactly the same size.
Oh, Lord.
Think the shape morphed while it moved? So did I.
Let's take you to the mystery spot in Santa Cruz, California, where you won't believe your eyes.
Punch the left-hand table out of the paper.
Maybe he wants to over the right-hand table. Be the new Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Oh, how many of the geeks are doing this?
You know, at Google, they would give you an Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
But no, you get a packet.
Well, no, they gave us cardboard last.
That's right.
Last IO. At least it worked.
Exactly.
At least it did something. I got to think somebody there. Look at the guy with his arms folded.
Yeah.
I think somebody there is thinking, I paid $5,000 for this.
And he's doing a keynote.
If you
he's just sitting there waiting for people to open
up. Trust me.
Later today, a tour of Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. It's on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco.
We live in a 3D world, and the 3D objects imply.
And this is why nerds go to movies alone.
Exactly.
Your brain does this calculation automatically for you, making the assumption that you're looking at a 3D world. That's wrong in the specific case of trying to compare 2D table sizes here, but in general,
I'm going to go watch Periscope. I hope you don't mind.
Which is, after all, where we happen to live. Of course, the world isn't static, so perceiving motion is critical.
Yeah, we're watching live coverage right now. Almost live coverage of the Facebook F8 Developers Conference. This is the day 2 keynote, and speaking right now, not the founder of Oculus Rift, Palmer was smart enough not to go, but is he the current president?
He's the chief scientist of Oculus.
Chief scientist at Oculus Rift.
Michael Abrash.
And so far he's been mostly doing optical illusions.
Yeah, magic tricks. And they're not new ones either. These are the ones that we've all seen.
I've seen these on Google Plus many times.
Even though they're not actually changing. If that doesn't work for you, look at either dot.
I mean, I hope that there's a big message for developers of Oculus here saying that, you know, you really have to be responsible with the illusions or something.
Oh, you're really working hard.
But yeah, just put it in the packet and move on.
The dots are focused near the fovea, the high-resolution part of your retina. The sharp circular edges are the highest-frequency components, so the movement of the dots drives motion detection. Away from the fovea, however, there's not enough resolution to pick up those edges clearly. So motion detection is based on the movement.
What I want is a
within each dot.
Is a drone that has virtual reality cameras, 360, up, down, sideways.
Motion detection mechanisms.
That would be cool.
Most of the time, the two work harmoniously together, but this example shows that that relationship.
Good, I'm looking at a blog post from Abrash when he joined Oculus a year ago. The path to the metaverse he talks about in the.
Here's a video of a carnival.
Mid-90s, meeting John Carmack and spending hours talking about how to build the metaverse. So this is a long-time goal. He comes from Valve.
Put it over your left eye like this, making sure to keep both eyes open and look at the video again. Pay particular attention.
Of course, Carmack is the CTO. I would have rather see him, frankly. But
remember, look, hold the film.
Problem with scientists is they
both eyes open.
They like doing this.
Out toward you, like watching a 3D movie. It doesn't work for everyone, but most people can see the effect clearly.
I guess it's important to understand the fundamentals of how VR works.
Not exactly breaking news, though.
Yeah. A lot of people not doing that, by the way.
It's a fascinating glimpse into our perceptual machinery. The less light the retina is receiving, the slower the eye is to send a signal to the brain. As a result of the dark filter, your left eye is signaling the brain later than your right eye. That means the signal from frame N of the video reaches the visual cortex from the right eye.
Abrash also works at Microsoft.
From the left eye. Since your depth perception depends on the relative positions of objects between the two eyes, this delay of the left eye's signal means objects moving right to left appear to be nearer and vice versa. Since the nearer objects in this scene are in
1990,
right
he wrote a book called The Zen of Assembly
right,
Language.
They pop out as 3D, a phenomenon known as the Pulfrich effect.
Well, he made a good move into something more interesting.
His Wikipedia article says he's a game programmer and technical writer, not a scientist. Is that the same one?
Of course, the straw isn't really going through the window. What's happening here is that you're making a very reasonable assumption.
He wrote Space Strike in 1982.
That happens to be wrong.
Snack Attack for the Apple II. And Cosmic Creator, Crusader, Big Top.
There are a number of cues on the window that imply a perspective that doesn't exist.
Wrote the assembly, some of the graphics code in assembly language for Windows NT 3.1.
As a result, the straw seems to rotate.
Worked on Quake.
This doesn't match.
That was actually a record player that was doing that illusion.
You end up seeing something impossible.
Yeah. We've seen that on a record player, of course, a turntable, if you could find a turntable.
But doesn't wind up with an impossible solution.
Yeah.
Just an incorrect one.
Did do natural language research for Microsoft, was on the Xbox team.
Mashable and Engadget both picked up on the hint that Oculus Rift will be available this year.
Yeah. Well, it is in a way because you can. It's available right now because, of course, the Gear VR uses Oculus Rift.
Here's what's actually
You need a Note 4 or an S6
Real
and the appropriate headset.
Especially faces tend to be convex. So your visual system assumes convexity in the absence of cues to the contrary. The only way to make
this man's
kind of
really
convexity.
Worked everywhere at Microsoft,
in very odd
at
so that's exactly what
id doing Quake. He's worked at Intel.
Might say,
he's worked
what's
at
really
Valve.
Going to bake your noodle later on. Now that you know what's happening,
joined Oculus a year ago, almost
really
exactly,
is.
As chief scientist. He was not at Oculus at any point. He joined after Facebook agreed to buy Oculus.
Isn't going to undo millions of years of evolution in a lifetime of looking at faces.
It's best known really as a
there are many
writer. Wrote for Dr. Dobbs' journal. I actually now remember his byline.
Touch, smell, taste,
wrote a lot about assembly language.
Balance illusions. These tell us a great deal about our perceptual system, but our model of the world is constructed out of many inputs across all our senses. So multi-sense illusions are even more revealing about the inferential nature of reality. We only have time to look at one of these, the McGurk effect, but it's one of the best demonstrations I've seen of how we construct reality.
Bar, 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 bar.
Obviously, she's saying bar, bar, bar.
I think she wants a drink.
Now let's watch a slightly different
beer. Beer.
It's an alcoholic.
Beer.
Bar. Bar, 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 bar.
Here we can clearly
the bar is too far.
Far, far, far. Except that she isn't.
What?
The video shows her saying far, but the audio track is still of her saying bar exactly
oh,
as
my
she
God.
Did in the video.
That's actually kind of
the
interesting.
Visual input overrode the audio.
Well, that's called lip reading.
To make it crystal clear what's going on, let's look at this one
that's
more time.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Once again, we'll have a soundtrack that says bar. But this time, we'll have a split screen with a face saying far on one side and a face saying bar on the other. As this plays, move your eyes from one side to the other and observe how what you hear changes.
Bar, 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 bar.
Wow, that's really bar, interesting.
Bar.
I've never seen that one.
Bar, bar.
Now, about that Oculus Rift.
The McGurk effect is an emphatic answer to
the McGurk effect?
What is real? What you hear depends on what you're
yeah,
looking
stowing
at.
Stowing that away. I'll use that.
Should be called
a couple
the far
years
of it. Effect.
You aren't a microphone.
Far.
The McGurk
you're an
far.
Machine that integrates all available evidence to construct the most likely model of the world. In short, reality is what our brain reconstructs it to be, based on our model of the world and the sparse data coming in from our senses. I think it's fair to say that our experience of the world is an illusion, one that evolution has honed to be highly functional in terms of survival and reproduction. Since the primary objective of the perceptual system as it evolved was to stay alive, it operates rapidly and automatically. As the McGurk effect demonstrates, given a particular set of inputs, we have very little conscious choice about the reality we'll experience. That's why the rare cases where you actually can choose the experience stand out. Like this Necker cube, where you can flip between looking at a cube from above and from below. Which brings us back to virtual reality and why it's different from anything that's
come
before.
Moment too soon.
VR is about experiencing a virtual world as real. And what we've just learned is that an experience is real to the extent it convinces your perceptual system and brain. Because experience
so that means to the extent he can convince me, Oculus Rift is real.
From the data right. It receives. And our perceptual system does that inference.
Or they can convince us that an ad is a recommended post.
Yeah, did he really ever explain why Facebook is involved here?
Done right, truly is reality as far as the observer is concerned. So what does it take to do virtual reality right? As it turns out,
we could do Bar and Far. You want to do the McGurk effect a little later on?
No.
Just you and me.
You could do it on Periscope.
Bar. Sensors, we could.
Drive the correct inference. To paraphrase Morpheus, some rules can be bent, others can be broken. For example, many of you will get to experience the demo of the latest iteration.
I think Facebook's planning to use us all as batteries to power their aircraft carrier data centers.
Do you feel like much progress has been made with the Rift since Developer Unit 2? He says we're going to see a new version, but
and yet, when you're using Crescent Bay, you're looking at photons coming from pixels strobed at 90 hertz, rather than photons continuously arriving from real-world surfaces and lights. That works because the period
90 hertz, that's interesting.
On the retina accumulate photons is about 20 milliseconds. And the structure of those
high frame rate does make a difference in the perceptual effectiveness of VR.
Worse, as they do to them arriving continuously from real-world surfaces. Drop the frame rate to 60 hertz, however, and those same receptive fields will start to detect flicker. Drop it to 10 hertz, and motion will cease to appear smooth. In fact, Crescent Bay's display system differs from the real world in many ways. But by taking advantage of the physiology of the visual system, it nonetheless produces the desired signals to the brain.
Getting frame rates over about 70 or 75 frames per second makes a huge difference in terms of the nausea effect.
The right signals to the brain.
Makes it feel much more stable.
The obvious part is learning what it takes to get the brain to make a desired inference. For example, remember this?
Really?
We were able to get the brain to infer a face shape and the corresponding head movement by leveraging the convexity assumption. The same sort of thing is required in a general sense in order for VR to work.
Of course, you have to be able to leverage the convexity assumption. That's not trivial.
You've got to leverage the convexity assumption.
Especially when it involves feedback loops. For example,
you don't hear the word convexity a lot.
Too much for those of you who haven't experienced it yet. For many people, the defining...
By the way, the high frame rate is not an easy thing to do in a game.
Yeah,
it's one thing to do in a demo where you pre-rendered it,
which shows that enough unconscious inference has kicked in.
But that's one of the challenges, is to get that 75, 80, 90 frames per second in a game.
Why does that happen? While the
especially at high res.
Climbs out onto a ledge outside a building and looks down at 1,000 feet, never makes anyone grab for support. The difference is that when you move your head in Crescent Bay, both the motion your vestibular organs report and the parallax or visual system report match the motor signals you sent in your neck muscles and your sense of proprioception.
Crescent Bay is one of the demos they've
that
been,
is your model
one of the long-time Oculus Rift demos.
And they do so with low enough latency so that your brain can fuse all those data points into a coherent model of the world. At the core of this is a feedback loop. You move your head, what you see changes correctly and with an almost imperceptible delay, allowing your brain to maintain the same kind of model of the virtual world as it does for the real world, which then leads smoothly to further motion. That's the fundamental difference between movies and VR. Movies provide similar images, but with no feedback loop for head motion. As a result, we perceive movies as moving pictures on a flat surface, still firmly embedded in the real world. Good VR, in contrast, isn't perceived as pictures at all. It replaces rather than augments the real world. VR is about driving our perceptions the way they're built to be driven. If we can do that, it should be completely unsurprising that it enables us to create new realities. If the technology becomes good enough, VR should theoretically be able in the limit to create not only any experience that's possible in the real world, but any experience that we're capable of having. That's most certainly not the case today, as is obvious as soon as you reach out for that pipe, and it's not really there. VR today is good enough to create experiences, but just barely.
Someday we'll be able to create a VR experience where everything is actually around you.
That's right.
And when you reach out and touch the pipe, it's actually there.
Let's take a quick look at some.
Then you just throw away the helmet.
For improvement. Since we're talking about the pipe, let's start with haptics. The feedback loop I described earlier was about perceiving the world. The second key feedback loop is the one that
problem.
Allows
you're wearing it on your head.
Yes.
All I can do is vibrate your head.
Right now, Virtual interaction is
you're going to have to wear gloves, too. If you're
right. Exactly. This is the problem with virtual reality, which is that
it's going to take
it's
time.
So, it, in it's order to make it truly immersive, it has to be a lot of infrastructure, which is why augmented reality is so good. If you actually see real objects,
you do see hands and pipes.
In terms of pixel density, field of view, dynamic range, image quality.
This is going to be great when we can jack in.
And while all that is improving,
and I feel that'll happen at some point. You just alter the sensorium directly.
Example of how much better visuals can get. In order for Crescent Bay to deliver the same pixel density as a monitor or the normal viewing distance, it would have to have a resolution.
I actually wonder whether it will cut drug use, because people who want to sort of
experience distorted reality,
taking drugs, you can go to any other kind of fantasy world holodeck type of thing,
and it's got to feel something. It's all about how it feels.
Roughly 200 times as many pixels.
This is an interesting point. One of the real challenges is the resolution has to be 5K.
No hardware breakthroughs are needed to make this happen. Just a lot of compute power and the motivation to figure out how to bring audio spatialization and propagation to consumer products.
I think a really good point is that none of this is a breakthrough in technology. All of this is about getting the cost down
and miniaturization sufficient.
You need a breakthrough in financing.
Tracking the human body is obviously critical.
And they got Mark Zuckerberg.
Virtual worlds won't seem fully real until you can see your own body. And you won't truly feel like you're sharing an experience with others until your brain accepts their avatars as people.
I think the jury's still out, at least in my mind, about whether VR is the next big thing or just another 3D movie kind of thing, just a gimmick.
You want to be able to import your coffee cup so you can pick it up without taking off your headset. And ultimately,
presented today,
you want to be able to see your keyboard and mouse so you can use them in an infinitely configurable virtual workspace. Finally,
no, I don't think people want keyboards and mice in virtual reality.
Yeah, that would be
surprisingly little is understood.
Let's have a steam engine.
Right. Perceptual system.
I want a game where I simulate doing the dishes.
It's easy for me to casually say that we'll be able
to use
our
never taken to driving games. It's like, plenty of that, thank you.
Right, in my actual car, the resolution is amazing.
Perfect.
Require much deeper understanding than currently exists, followed by radically new technology.
Gary in our chat room says the first virtual reality headset, he worked in VR, from VPL was 480 lines.
The first reason is that VR is already
basically
far
DVD
to
resolution
experiences on consumer hardware, as Crescent Bay makes
I think
clear.
They have Oculus to
and
1080,
we'll be
do they?
Quantity before long.
Mm-hmm. Was 720 in the first developer
the second
version.
Reason is that there are at least four major efforts to ship good consumer VR within a year or two. When Oculus, Samsung, Sony, and Valve/HTC are all jumping into a market, it's a pretty good bet that there's something important going on. The third reason is that developing better VR technology is hard and will require long-term
960 by 1080 per
Facebook's
eye, so yeah,
1080p. Facebook's acquisition of Oculus was an important moment for this. Once that happened, there was no longer any doubt about whether VR would get the runway it needed to fulfill its potential. The final reason is the march of technology. This was my first computer, a 4 megahertz Z80-based vector graphics VIP system, for the bargain price of $6,000.
I had a North Star Advantage, looked just like that. It's awesome.
It didn't have a floating point unit, so let's generously estimate it at 7 kiloflops. NVIDIA just announced the Titan X, a desktop graphics card to deliver
many gigaflops.
Teraflops.
Teraflops.
A performance increase of about a billion times in about 33 years.
That's awesome.
That's how technology marches forward when there's competition and a compelling reason, and that's what's going to happen with VR. In short, a lot of powerful forces are coming together right now to make VR happen. And with that, we've come to the end of our lightning tour of why VR has the potential to be a unique
lightning tour. Was that a lightning tour?
And why I think it's going to take off really, in the next few years.
I don't think that's what we did.
So what does it all mean? Cypher summed it up nicely. It means buckle your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye.
All right, that's one too many
every
Matrix
decade
references.
Or so, Kansas goes bye-bye in the digital world, and everything changes. Over the past 50 years, that progression has taken us from mini computers to personal
Virgil
computers.
Virgil points out that that NVIDIA card has 12 gigabytes of VRAM.
So what's next? It probably won't surprise you that I think VR is the leading candidate to be the next entry in that table. And maybe even more than that. VR is more than just another platform. In the long run, it has the potential to create the whole range of human experience. And while it'll be a very long time before all of that potential is fulfilled,
I see some real human factor issues with VR.
The shift to virtual reality is going to bring huge changes, both for us as developers and for society as a whole.
I can see gamers loving it.
Think about the implications.
But gamers are used to spending a lot of money on gear to make their games more immersive.
Experience whatever you want.
Well, I mean, that's actually an interesting point. The vast majority of gamers are not, in fact,
it's clear
console gamers. They're casual gamers.
Everything.
And
well, they're not.
The majority of people who play games don't. Aren't right. willing to invest.
No, no, it's PC gamers primarily.
Right?
Not even console gamers. That's the market, PC gamers.
Will work, or what the equivalent of the Facebook wall will be, or what kind of games people will want to play in VR, or, most important in my opinion, how people will want to interact virtually with each other.
I think this is a fairly disappointing keynote, as yesterday's was. Essentially, they could have said, nothing new to report. We're working hard and behind the scenes, and we think we'll have something for you later this year.
It was mostly a bunch of optical illusions and literally zero information in this particular keynote about Oculus VR as a platform or Oculus Rift as a product. The previous speaker, the CTO, mentioned that it's coming this year, but that's not even an official.
This was a lot of hand-waving is really what it was. It's we're doing something here, really.
Yep.
Very disappointing. I would have liked to have seen at least something more. I guess if you go to the teleportation booth, that's what you're seeing there. You can at least try the new version of Oculus VR. That concludes the second of two keynotes from Facebook's developer conference, F8. Not really a whole lot to report. And I think maybe that's what Facebook wanted. It's certainly on day one yesterday. The message was developers were providing a stable platform for you. We're not going to change a lot. Here's the benefits, and we hope you will continue to adopt.
Yep.
A little more disappointing today. I think we were hoping at least to see something innovative and new, and it's really the same story once again from Oculus.
Yeah, they've been stringing us along for a long time about Oculus. I know it's got to be a very difficult problem, but they've been talking about it and hyping it for a long, long time. And so that's why I think we had some pent-up demand for some real information. Give us something about Oculus, something, anything.
Well,
but
put yourself
nothing.
in the developer's seat. I mean, this is a developer's conference. What they would like to see is more information about how to develop for Oculus, what we need to do, how could we get ready. They have an SDK, but sure. I think that it's extremely challenging to do 90 frames per second of a real video game.
Yeah.
And they didn't demonstrate, and they didn't, maybe in some of the panels later in the day, they'll show people what the hardware that we don't even know what they're going to sell at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Is it maybe just more of this? I mean, this is a fairly affordable device, just a few hundred dollars, the Gear VR from Samsung, but it requires a very expensive Note 4 or S6. That's where all the hardware is. That's where all the work is. And it's really just demo level. It is not an immersive game situation. Right. So I think we're just going to have to – the question marks remain on Oculus Rift, and we'll see what happens. Facebook's probably just sticking to their knitting, and this is a blue sky thing for them.
Yep.
Thank you, Mike Elgin. Thank you all for joining us. And what's next?
Know-how.
Father Robert and Brian Burnett. Mike will be back on Monday, tomorrow, 10 a.m. Pacific with TNT.
Either bright or early.
And I'll be back Saturday with the Tech Guy. Thanks for joining, and iPad Today with Sarah Lane. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Twitter.